Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello from a freezing Hilversum, and we begin with some advice to start a tape recorder if you haven't already done so, and a reminder that later on today we'll have the results of Media Quiz 83. We start this week with frequency changes at Radio Netherlands, taking place as from Sunday, March the 6th. At 20:30 UTC, we're dropping 15560 kHz in the 19-metre band, and replacing it by 11730 kHz from Lopik. All other English broadcasts remain on the same part of the dial, so that's new 11730 kHz at 20:30 as from March the 6th. Meanwhile, the BRT in Belgium has recently started using 17610 kHz to North America around 13:30 UTC. And we'd be interested to hear from European listeners if this is now troublesome in your area, if you're trying to listen to us, Radio Netherlands, also in English at the same time, on nearby 17605. Let us know. Well, now to Asia, and here's Pete Myers.
Radio Japan says that its tests last autumn of single sideband broadcasts was a success, and the technical data sent in by a total of 68 listeners will be analysed together with that collected by a Japanese survey team who travelled to Western North America at the time of the broadcast. As from April the 4th, Radio Japan is changing the times of its Pacific service in English. Transmissions will start 75 minutes earlier than at present, at 08:45 UTC, and last an hour.
Malta's on the move again. This time the recently expanded Radio Mediterranean is announcing that as from next Monday, February the 21st, they'll change the times of the various language broadcasts. Arabic will be between 18 and 19 hours, French between 21:30 and 22:30, and English now between 22:30 and 23:30 UTC. The frequencies of 15.57 medium wave and shortwave 6110 kHz remain the same, and that new time for English at 22:30 for an hour might be of interest to listeners in North America as well as Europe. The Austrian shortwave service, the ORF in Vienna, made some changes last Sunday, which may also affect reception in North America, as they explained on the 13th.
For the western part of North America, during the period from 04 to 06 hours UTC, we are dropping 5.945 megahertz and going to 9.655. 9.655 megahertz. For Central America, during the period 02 to 04 hours UTC, we are dropping 9.515 megahertz and going to 11.665 megahertz. And for East Asia, during the period 12 to 15 hours UTC, we are dropping 9.695 megahertz and going to 15.290 megahertz.
Our colleagues at the German language programme on the ORF also reported Sunday that the Lebanon has a new station. Called the Voice of Arab Lebanon, it's been noted on 6204 kHz between 04 and 2050 UTC. Languages are Arabic and French, with French being heard at 12:30 and 18 hours. The frequency again, 6204 kHz. But signals are too weak to confirm this in Hilversum at the moment.
Perhaps we should call 1983 WWCCY, to stand for Why We Can't Communicate Here. According to the International Telecommunications Union, this year is meant to stimulate the development of communication infrastructures. But it's going to be interesting to see what impact this special year has on the general public in comparison with special UN years to promote work for the handicapped and women in society. The brunt of the organizational side is to be done by national committees, with the ITU in Geneva coordinating the activities and publicizing the special events. Some of the projects set up so far under the banner of World Communications Year have definite political overtones. And because the organization is being done on a national level, some of the schemes in the Third World look like providing a future dependency on the donating industrialized country in the field of spare parts. It's to be hoped that the complicated communications and media jargon that has been used to describe special events this year will be simplified and perhaps involve more than just government post, telephone and telegraph organizations. Generosity seems to be the word when it comes to the special fund set up for World Communications Year by the ITU. Governments and private organizations have been invited to contribute either in cash or in kind, and everyone seems to be showing the true spirit of cooperation. Luxembourg gave $10,000, Pakistan $5,000, Liechtenstein $1,000, India gave $20,000. While the Netherlands dug deep to come up with just over $18,000. Contributions from individuals total $170, according to the latest available figures. France, the UK, the East Bloc countries, they have yet to contribute. Others have donated equipment instead of money, with West Germany giving $1.3 million US dollars, the United States just over $1 million, and Sweden $324,000. The total comes to $3.4 million US dollars, which isn't going to finance much at all, except perhaps a lot of conferences. But 1983 is young, and we'll be reporting on developments under the WCY banner.
We'll also be trying to make a positive contribution to the spirit of WCY, starting on April the 30th. Well, now we cross to Denmark for this report.
2 years ago, it was decided by the Danish Parliament that local radio and TV was going to be introduced in Denmark. The intention was to give permission to small groups all over the country to set up local stations, which would strengthen the participant democracy and serve the local communities. The plan, however, immediately ran into problems, especially about how to finance the entire project. Those problems were finally settled on February the 2nd, and it now seems that some 50 radio stations and 20 TV stations will get the go-ahead from the Minister of Culture, Mimi Stilling Jakobsen. There will not be 50 radio transmitters and 20 TV transmitters, though, as a lot of organizations will have to share transmitters. This is especially the case in Copenhagen and Aarhus. The transmitting power will be 10 watts of the FM stations, which will all be heard in the 100 to 104 megahertz area, and the TV stations will have slightly more power and will be on UHF. A lot of criticism has emerged against the authorities due to the extremely slow accomplishment of the new law. One such protest against the authorities was Grill Radio, a pirate radio station operating on FM 102 MHz in Copenhagen.
De lytter til Grill Radio på 102 MHz. Grill Radio er Københavns hidtil eneste piratstation og er derfor ganske exceptionel.
Grill Radio was on the air 3 Tuesdays in a row in September last year, until it eventually was raided by the Danish postal authorities after a transmission with a duration of only 5 minutes, by the way. A few weeks ago, one of the operators was fined 1,500 Danish kroner, that's something like 180 US dollars. Every Sunday night there's a program for young people called P4 on Radio Denmark's first program.
When you're under occasional stress, when you've got to relax,
listen to P4 on Sunday evenings, folks, and get really angry.
Bring back memories from another radio station in Scandinavia, their jingle. But back to our story. The people of P4 got interested in Grill Radio and asked them to do a program for P4, and so they did. 8 minutes of pirate radio was transmitted on Radio Denmark on Sunday the 31st of January. they pretended taking over the entire network of Radio Denmark's first program.
Jeg tror, den er der nu.
Men det enke er onkel Kai fra Hedehub.
Prøv lige sidst. Prøv lige at tage den her.
Og ved du hvad, så spørger dig. Skal vi ikke køre det nu?
Jo, prøv at dreje på den der knap.
Nu. Okay.
Nu.
Danmarks Radios monopol er på. Du lytter til Grillradio. Grillradio vil bringe dig musik, underholdning og information på hele programindlægget.
Vi har tidligere sendt i København. The people of P4 like the program so much that they asked Grill Radio to do another four programs, which now is heard every Sunday in February. Each program lasts 5 minutes and can be heard on FM and also longwave 245 kHz, that's 245 kHz, over most of Europe. There's no fixed broadcasting time for Grill Radio, but P4 lasts from 1800 hours to 2130 UTC, and Grill Radio is likely to appear within the first hour. This is how they sounded last Sunday.
Whatever happened to all the fun in the world?
Der er nu gået 2 år siden Folketinget sagde, at der skulle indføres lokal radio.
For Media Network, this is Stig Hartvig Nielsen, Denmark.
Thank you. And bearing in mind the choice that Danish radio and television listeners have at the moment, I'm sure that a growth in some form of private media competition will be welcomed, at least by the younger generation. Now, 2 political clandestine stations are moving again. Radio Miscus, the clandestine aimed at the Indians in Nicaragua, have announced a new transmission at 19 hours UTC on Wednesdays. We'll have a more complete report as to why it's there next week, all being well, and that report comes from the BBC Monitoring Service. Whilst this past Sunday saw the reappearance of this station.
Good morning, listeners. Good morning. Broadcasting from high-powered transmitters located at a secret location somewhere in England. This is your patriotic right-wing clandestine radio station. This is Radio Enoch. Radio Enoch is operated by the organisation People Against Marxism.
Well, that voice caused a stir in the UK a few years ago, not only in the Sunday Observer newspaper, but also among the hobby pirates who attempted to jam it. As it says, it's a political clandestine against Marxism. And it hasn't returned because Karl Marx is having a posthumous 100th birthday next month, but because they want to protest against the current campaign in Britain against nuclear disarmament. They call the campaign, the CND, the scum of the earth, and all this around 1150 UTC on 7341 kHz. The voices are different from the old Radio Enoch, but one of their announcers, Lady Jane Birdwood, is standing as an independent patriotic candidate in the by-election in Bermondsey, South London, very soon. According to Media Network reporter Mike Barraclough, the station promised to return in 3 weeks. And meanwhile, legislation is still to go through the British Parliament to make for much stiffer penalties for illegal broadcasting. Fines of up to £1,000 are promised. Now, we've had letters from some listeners asking whether a proposal to make Radio Netherlands carry commercials got anywhere in the Dutch Parliament a few months ago. The answer is no, not for the moment, but this is a chestnut topic that's always popping up, which is where we'll take a break for the non-commercials.
If you're a regular listener to this station, you will have heard in recent weeks of the 1983 European DX Council Conference, which is taking place in May in London. The EDXE conference is the annual meeting point for everyone interested in shortwave radio, whether on the receiving end, as a dedicated DXer, or perhaps occasional listener, or on the broadcasting side, either as program producer or engineer. There'll be much happening, and there's still time to register. Full information is available now from EDXE, Post Box 4, St Ives, Huntingdon, Cambridgeshire, in England. Postal code PE174FE.
If you're still using the wireless receiver that Grandpa gave you to listen to this program, you're doing it for one of two reasons. Either you can't afford a new radio, or you're utterly confused as to what to buy next. Shortwave sets of the 1980s are smaller and cheaper. Yet shops that have heard of shortwave broadcasting are hard to find, let alone offer unbiased advice. This is where Radio Netherlands is trying to help with a new 16-page publication called The Receiver Shopping List. Edition 6 has just been completely revised to include all the latest receivers into five categories: cheap and cheerful portables, shortwave converters for the car, serious shortwave listener sets, DX hobby receivers, and semi-professional sets. Thanks to a computer, plus a worldwide team of monitors, we can give you an idea of the price in your part of the world and indicate receivers using modern technology. We also list addresses of shortwave equipment suppliers and sources of service sheets on older receivers. This consumer's guide to shortwave receivers is free by writing to Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, Hilversum, Holland, and ask for the receiver shopping list.
Welcome back. The problem with radio broadcasting is that you always have to think ahead if you want to succeed. And it's only after some 60 years of being active on the airwaves that Holland has got around to remembering the early days of radio. Last Friday, in the canteen of one of the domestic broadcasting organisations here in Hilversum, the head of Avro Television Programmes, Jerry Luchtenberg, spoke into a 1920s microphone.
Dames en heren, dit instrument is een heel beroemde microfoon. Bedenk wel dat vele illustere vaderlanders voor deze microfoon hebben gesproken. Koningin Wilhelmina.
That ceremony was to mark the opening of the first broadcasting museum in Holland. Look into the history books and you'll find that depending on the country, everyone claims to have invented radio. Was it the British, the Russians, the Canadians? I asked Cor van Briel, who's the curator of the new broadcasting museum, whether Holland makes any claims.
Yes, we do. The first transmission in Holland has started on the 6th of November in 1919, and it is made by engineer Hanso Henricus Asteringa Itzerda in The Hague in Holland. And there is no broadcast corporation all over the world who can say that they had an announcement before the 6th of November in 1919.
But don't the Canadians say that they did a broadcast in 1906, long before that?
Yes, they have done, but it was in one single broadcast.
So you're saying that in 1919 things were happening on a regular basis?
Yes, that's correct. There was an announcement every Wednesday in the paper in Rotterdam announcing the concerts who were given by Mr. Itzeda. And later on, the so-called Dutch concert in Scheveningen in the Kurhaus. Transmission of Itzeda from The Hague, the PCGG transmitter, was very well heard in England, and the readers of the Daily Mail, an English newspaper, made a kind of a cooperation to sponsor Mr. Itzeda, and with that sponsoring he was able to make Dutch concerts on the Sundays, that were the second transmission.
With English announcements?
Yes, of course. Yes, it was an English announcement, a real English transmission. And they paid the transmissions, that was the most important thing for him.
And curiously, money was a point brought out at the official front door opening ceremony last Friday by the Lord Mayor of Hilversum. The museum house is historical in itself. It housed the Dutch news agency ANP for many years, and it was here too that the Germans operated their wartime propaganda machine for the Netherlands some 40 years ago. For the moment, two rooms have been made available for the displays, and now it's time to look for sponsors.
We hope to get a little bit of money from the cultural ministry and also of the bankers and industries. And there's a very great electronic industry in Holland who has some importance to have his name called here in this museum. We have domestic radio receivers from 1916 on. And 1922, 1923, and so on. It's very old equipment. And in most of the time they are restored and in playing order.
But the Second World War didn't help the historians. Archives from one of the broadcasting companies was totally destroyed by fire, whilst another decided that the best solution would be to dig a deep hole and bury all the valuable documents. They did a good job, because even today, nobody knows exactly where they are. But if you have written mementos from the early days, particularly concerning pre-war broadcasting from Holland, such as QSL cards, programme schedules, perhaps even proof from the Daily Mail Fund that you were supporting those Dutch concerts, the museum curator is interested.
Yes, I'm very interested. I would be very grateful when people take the opportunity to send me some things about that early broadcasting.
And if you care to drop us a line with a description of what you have, we'll pass your letter on to the museum and they'll get in touch with you. The older the material, the better. They also hope to start a regular opening schedule for the public in a few weeks' time. To Washington, D.C. now, where our media man, Dan Robinson, has been waiting on the line. So, what's new, Dan?
Well, let me start this month by noting the latest frequency for the anti-Sandinista station Radio 15 de Septiembre, heard here in Washington on 6510, 6510 at 0500 UTC. Now, that's a switch from the former frequencies of 6900 megahertz in that range and 6200 megahertz. The other anti-Sandinista station, La Voz del Sandino, was heard with good signals on 6227, 6227, signing off with national anthem-type march. This one had a jammer attached to it, by the way. A good way to find some of those Central American clandestines is indeed to look for the jamming signal. So La Voz de Sandino, also around 0500 UTC.
And the target area in this case is Nicaragua, of course.
The target area is Nicaragua, especially for La Voz de Sandino, which has very specialized programming sponsored by one of the anti-Sandinista groups. Jonathan, I'll stay in Latin America for the moment because that's where we've had some interesting reception lately. Over the past few weeks, we're hearing Brazilians on the 25-meter band very late into our East Coast evening. Now, this also has been accompanied by excellent Southern African reception. Now, this is a characteristic very often when we have good South American reception. We also have Southern African openings. So, Venezuela, the station listed in the World Radio Handbook on 1360 medium wave, 24-hour operation from Maracaibo, Catatumbo Internacional, showed up on a shortwave frequency, 9620. That's 9620. And this was back at the end of last month, but has been noted there since. But as always happens, other stations are now interfering on 9620. So try for Catatumbo Internacional, the new station, in the 0300 to 0400 time slot. Now, the problem there now is Cairo. Now, Cairo has been heard using 9620 at 0400, but give it a try with a strong notch filter. You might be able to pull the Venezuelan out. Also in Venezuela, Radio Valles del Toy on 6129, heard 2301 with music, U.S. pop, full IDs as La Primera y Más Potente, Cada Día Mejor. They had ads and more Venezuelan music until sudden sign-off at 2309 without a national anthem. Over to Colombia briefly, Radio Sur Colombiana, for some nice listening on 5010, good signals around 0400.
So much for Latin America. What about Africa you were talking about?
4,000 kilohertz, Jonathan, Cameroon, Bafoussam, the regional station during excellent Central African conditions, was heard at 0451, signing on with the national anthem and an ID by man into language conversation. Angola is now heard in the 0400 to 0430 time slot on both 11955 and 9660. A 25-meter frequency is better and the 31-meter channel, which is highly interfered with. Okay, over to India. Our morning periods here have been providing excellent Indian regional reception. Now, I haven't experienced this more than a few times in the past few years. We heard All India Radio Hyderabad on 4800 from 1248 UTC, All India Radio Guwahati on 4775 with Indian vocals and instrumental music, 1217 UTC, sign-off, on 4860, All India Radio Delhi, with music and a possible news program at 1300. Now, at the same time, I'd like to mention we had Radio Republik Indonesia, Surakarta, on 4900 at 1234. As daylight increases towards springtime here, these are going to get harder and harder, so try for them now.
And now, the results of Media Quiz 1983.
On January the 13th and 20th, we broadcast a quiz with six questions concerning the international broadcasting media, with the promise of copies of the World Radio Television Handbook as prizes.
Some people thought we were making it too easy, but whereas we could have asked you to identify the Uzbek national anthem, by making it more difficult, we'd confine the contest to people with quite a measure of shortwave listening experience. We deliberately didn't publicize the contest in advance because we wanted to give an advantage to regular listeners. And we're delighted with the response. Well, first the questions and the correct answers.
In question one, you had to name the country in which the American forces had just set up a station alongside a Dutch forces sender. The answer we wanted was the Lebanon. Nearly everyone got that right, but we also had Laos and Liechtenstein.
The second question asked you which country starts with a letter from the alphabet that can only mean one country. We gave you Qatar as the example, and we were looking for Oman, the only country in the English language beginning with the letter O.
No problems there. Question three asked you what was the old name of Radio Beijing. It was Peking, of course. No problems there too.
Whereas question four did confuse some. This is World Communications Year, as coordinated by the ITU in Geneva. Some people thought EDXC was behind it, or even the Italian Radio Club.
Question five asked you for the call letters of the new commercial shortwave station on Saipan, beaming towards Japan, which was simply KYOI. Some thought it was KGEI instead.
And finally, by taking the first letter of each answer, you should have come up with the word LOPIC, which is our present shortwave transmitter site here in the Netherlands, spelt L-O-P-I-K. Next year, Radio Netherlands hopes to be broadcasting from facilities in Flevoland instead.
Which means that LOPIC will disappear. So much for the answers then. With me now is Andy Sennett of the World Radio and TV Handbook. And since we came on the air, Andy's been counting them up. Have you got a number yet?
Yes, I have, and I'm delighted to say we've had over 300 of them, with all target areas well represented. And because of the high response, I decided to be very strict in eliminating wrong or incomplete answers. So there are actually about 230 names in our box here.
Right, OK, let's give it a shake. OK, it's genuine, folks. Now, come on, pick one out.
I have one here. I'm pleased to say it's from India, in fact. You're more used to reading Indian names than I am.
OK, it reads Rajesh Desai, who lives in St. Inez, Panaji, Goa in India. And he wins the main prize, so what does that entail?
Well, he wins a copy of the WRTH 83 and a subscription to our 1983 newsletters. And the other four, who we'll draw in a moment, will each be receiving a copy of the new handbook.
Right, another one.
And this one here is from Christian Zettel at Ebergassing in Austria.
Another one. Come on.
Ooh. And the third one is from Paul Ryan, who lives at Melville, Western Australia.
One more.
And I think you can read this one, Jonathan.
Oh. And there's one from the United States, from Richard Altman, who lives in Knox in Pennsylvania. Right, OK, congratulations. And the final one.
OK, and maybe I'll take this one this time. And this is from somebody in Sweden, Bo Carlson, who lives at Grundesberg in Sweden. So congratulations to you.
Right, OK, so that's the five then.
Well, not exactly, Jonathan, because we had two letters, which I think have caught the spirit of World Communications Year. And maybe they'd be embarrassed if we mentioned them by name. But suffice it to say, one lives in St. Mary's, New South Wales, Australia, and the other in Bellevue, Washington State, USA. Both of these entrants said they'd already got a copy of the book on order, and that if they won, would we please donate their prizes to an organisation in Southeast Asia, where, of course, the handbook is difficult to obtain. Well, we think that's a very encouraging gesture. So, in addition to the five books as prizes, we'll be sending one copy of the handbook to AWR Asia in Pune, and the other one to the Union of Asian DXs, and I'm sure they'll be able to find a nice way of using those books.
right, that's it. Another bit of fun on April the 30th, so watch out for that. In the meantime, on behalf of today's contributors, this is Jonathan Mark saying have a nice weekend. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.